With your money briefing, I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. Can $140 million disappear into thin air? It can if the only person with a password to access the money dies and takes the password information to his grave. That's what many people believe happened at a Canadian cryptocurrency exchange. We'll have the details in a moment. First, these money and market stories you should know. A pay gap has emerged among graduates of MBA programs. A new study indicates that going into MBA programs, white students earned an average salary of $71,294, while minorities surveyed earned 24% less at $57,640. Upon graduation, that pay gap narrowed to 16%, with minorities earning $101,505 on average to their white counterparts' average of $117,834. Now, 900 men and women were surveyed who earned their degrees between 2005 and 2017. The students who identified as Black, Hispanic, or Native American received a bigger pay increase upon graduation, averaging a 76% salary gain. Their non-minority peers' salaries rose by an average 65%. But the study points out the gains come on top of unequal pay, leaving a pay gap. And Tesla cut the price of its mass-market Model 3 sedan to $42,900. That's about an $1,100 reduction, and it's the second price drop this year. It's also another step in CEO Elon Musk's quest to drive the price, not including tax credits and fuel savings, down to $35,000. The Journal's Robert Wall reports the Model 3 is actually facing an effective price increase in the U.S. this year as the government gradually eliminates a $7,500 tax credit for the purchase of electric vehicles. For Tesla buyers, that credit fell to $3,750 on January 1st, and it'll be cut in half again on July 1st before phasing out by year end. There's a lot of mystery surrounding Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, but here's something that takes mystery to a new level. $140 million stuck in a vault, or just plain old missing. How could that much money fall off the radar? Wall Street Journal cryptocurrency reporter Paul Vigna is just the man to come by with some answers for us, and he's here in our studio. So Paul, a Canadian cryptocurrency exchange reports the money missing. And it had to do with the death of the exchange's founder?
Yes. And look, there is a lot we still don't know. There is a lot that is yet to be, you know, confirmed and figured out. And there are a lot of different ways that this story could go. And we are following it. So that said, a 30-year-old Canadian named Gerald Cotton was running a Canadian cryptocurrency exchange called Quadrica CX. He apparently died in India in December. Mm-hmm. So the company had been having a lot of money problems since going back to last January. In January 2019, they finally filed for bankruptcy court protection. And what comes out is that Cotton was running the entire exchange from a laptop in his home. Mm. He was... Most of the customer money was held in what in the Bitcoin industry they call a cold wallet. It's basically just an account that is more or less kept offline.
You mentioned that in the story. Cold yeah. wallet is an offline place to hold
yes.
information?
Well, right. The information about customer balances.
And a hot wallet is connected to the internet directly.
Yes. Okay. And the way it kind of works is they'll have, you know, look, if you're a customer, you send money to them on your behalf. You know, you want to trade with them. You want to use their exchange for trading. You will send your money to what they call a hot wallet. It's just an account. Think of it as an account. Mm-hmm. So the company will have, you know, they may have more than one of each kind, but basically they have what's called a hot wallet, which is an account that they will use for all the sort of daily operations of the company, right? Money's coming in, money's moving out. Everything will go through the hot wallet. The cold wallet is where they will keep the bulk of their holdings. You keep it offline. You keep it in storage somewhere. A bank essentially does the same thing.
As a safety measure.
The trick here is that within Bitcoin, access to a wallet is gotten one of two ways. there's what's called a private and a public key. Think of them as just like passwords, mm-hmm. right? They're just access. So if you have the public key, you can send money to an address, to a wallet. So if I wanted to send Quadriga money, I wanted to invest in them, you know, I'm going to give them $1,000 and they're going to credit me $1,000 worth of crypto or whatever. I would send money to this public key. Anybody can see the public key. The private key allows you to take money out of the wallet. Anybody who has a private key to a wallet in cryptocurrency can move money out of that wallet. So the private key is it's an extremely sensitive piece of information.
It's like a withdrawal slip.
It is a withdrawal slip. It's like having a money order. I mean, it's almost like having the cash itself. Anybody who has the private key to any wallet can access that wallet, can drain the entire thing. So it's very critical that you don't give out this private key. What appeared to have happened in this case of Quadriga is that Cotton was the only person who had the private key.
Oh, no.
This is what they're saying right now.
And took it to his grave?
And took it to his grave.
And there's data that seems to indicate that no one knows where the money is and it could be gone altogether. Trading data.
This is where this kind of gets really crazy. And our story today, we talked to a couple of people who have done an analysis of, and look, the interesting thing about Bitcoin is that every transaction is maintained on a public ledger. That's what's called the blockchain. Every Bitcoin, the entire transaction history of every Bitcoin can be traced. It's an incredible amount of information, but it is all out there and you can trace it. You can trace it publicly. So the circumstances under which Cotton died are questionable.
The official word is Crohn's disease?
Yeah, the official word is complications from Crohn's disease. Mm-hmm. He died on a trip to India on December 9th. The company didn't announce it until January 15th. So the question is,
a month later.
Yeah, so the question is, you know, that's kind of odd. You know, nothing was said on social media, your family, no one knew, you didn't have friends, people weren't talking, like none of that happened. So for 5 weeks, while this company, mind you, is having a lot of money problems, no one says anything about him dying. Then for another 2 weeks, they don't say anything about him being the only person with a private key until they file for bankruptcy protection at the end of January.
Oh,
that's when they say, oh, by the way, this $140 million worth of customer assets that we have is in a cold wallet that Cotton was the only guy with the key to it. We can't get in it. Oops.
Seems like it could lead someone to believe that there was a lot of internal panic for that month.
Yes. But what happened was people started saying that story doesn't sound correct.
Mm-hmm.
Some people doubted the story and they went back and they started trying to trace the money flows through Quadriga.
The story on February 6th, just to lay it out.
Yes, the
folks.
Story on February 6th, which you can do because every transaction is on this public ledger, the blockchain.
Right.
So what a few people are starting to conclude is that the cold wallets with all this money being held aren't actually holding any money, that the money is elsewhere. That's what they're saying.
And there's some surreptitious activity, perhaps.
Yes. Look, I have to be very, very careful.
Well, we don't know.
We don't know. And the story, if you go read it, you will see there are other people doubting that you could conclusively find these cold wallets through this sort of forensic history of the blockchain. But a few people are starting to say, look, we don't think that these cold wallets with $140 million worth of crypto are actually holding $140 million worth of crypto. We think they may be holding virtually nothing and the money may be elsewhere. That's a big issue. That's a really big issue. What happened to the money?
And this exchange held a combination of cryptocurrency and cash.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, yes. They held their total obligations to their clients, their customers, was about $250 million in Canadian dollars. $180 million of it was in crypto and $70 million was in cash. They were also having, and we didn't have the room in the story to get into this, they were also having problems with the cash because, and a lot of cryptocurrency exchanges have this problem, they can't find banks that want to do business with them. Banks don't want to be involved in Bitcoin businesses. So a lot of crypto businesses, they'll get a bank account, the bank finds out what the business really is, and they drop them. So they have, and it's interesting, in their bankruptcy filing, they showed basically bank drafts sitting on this guy's stove in his kitchen.
Oh, my gosh.
So they they essentially have $70 million in cash, but they don't have banking. They don't have a bank.
Well,
so they can't. They actually have like a bank draft check that they can't cash to access the cash.
You know.
So it gets it's really at the very best. It is a story of incredibly gross mismanagement of customer funds, and it is a cautionary tale for anybody who wants to invest in cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
Know the exchange. Know what their business is. Are they a regulated exchange somewhere? Are they not regulated? Know what their practices are. Know how many employees they have. Do
right.
the employees have public, you know, can you find the CEO? Can you find these people online? Are do they exist? Is it one guy running it off his laptop, or is it an actual business with an office somewhere that is regulated by some authority, and you can have some confidence
mm-hmm.
that it is being run well?
Well, it's a lot of best practice homework you should do before you,
yes.
you enter into any
yes.
investment. You know,
right.
I don't know what it's like in Canada, but it seems like there's a red light flashing here that there is no established oversight and regulation in this area. Like,
well,
like we have here, we don't really have fully established regulation in the U.S. either, right?
Everyone's kind of in a in-between place in figuring this out. Some exchanges in the U.S., and I'm thinking of Gemini, Coinbase, Circle, those are the ones that jump off the top of my head. I think Kraken, too. They have sought out regulators. They have sought out regulation. They want to be regulated. They want to be transparent about what they're doing because they want to be seen as responsible, sober custodians of your money
right.
that you can trust.
Put money at ease.
Right.
Put people at ease to come
right.
over and say, hey.
There is that entire track of the cryptocurrency sector. There's this other track that doesn't want that. And they mm-hmm. can be anywhere. They can be registered in Canada. They could be in the U.S. They could be, a lot of them happen to be overseas in Asia. They are not regulated. They are not transparent. You don't know who they are. You are trusting them blindly. They exist. They are out there. They cannot be regulated away. The way Bitcoin works, the way the internet works. I mean, basically what this guy did was he bought some off-the-shelf software that would allow you to operate an exchange, slapped a name on it, and started marketing it.
Oh, wow.
Anybody can do that. I mean, think about it. He was running an entire exchange on one computer. Anybody can do that. You can be an extremely shady operation in this world with no regulatory oversight, no best practices, and be out there marketing yourself, selling yourself. So at the very least, this is an extremely cautionary tale that before you invest your money with anybody, you're right, with anybody anywhere,
mm-hmm.
you need to do some homework. You need to know who you're being involved with.
Well, this sounds like chapter one of a multi-chapter story. A lot of information is going to come out, and I hope to have you on as things develop here.
We hope to have more information as this goes on, yeah.
All right. That's the Journal's cryptocurrency reporter, Paul Vigna, here in our studio. Paul, thanks for stopping by.
Absolutely, JR. Thanks for having me.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm JR Whalen in New York for The Wall Street Journal.